Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
The vast majority of us are lucky never to have had first-hand experiences of plane crashes or, as we've been seeing in the last couple of weeks, earthquakes, tsunamis or indeed landslides. And the man who joins me now, however, is one of the first people on the scene at these horrific incidents. He's the tough job of identifying bodies and body parts of the victims. Dr. Richard Bassett is an Australian disaster victim identification expert and forensic dentist, and he joins us now. Good morning to you, Dr. Bassett.
Good morning to you.
It's the most unusual line of business to be in, if I may say so, respectfully. And I'm just curious as to how you go about saying that's the job for me.
Yes, it's a very unusual job, but I've been doing it for sort of 12 years or so now. And I get a variety of reactions when I'm telling people what I'm doing. Some people are completely horrified and most people are incredibly interested. So I guess there's a bit of the CSI effect happening in the community.
So what is your background, medically at least?
I'm a dentist. I've been a private practice dentist for probably 13 or 14 years when I finished university. And essentially, I just became very bored. And so I thought I'd try something a little more challenging.
Well, it doesn't come more challenging than that. I mean, you go from putting, I suppose, fillings in and dentistry and so forth, and now you're find yourself at the scenes of these. Is it mostly natural disasters?
We respond to all sorts of disasters. So we respond to terrorism incidents, natural disasters, accidents. Now I've been involved in all of those situations over the years.
So take us to your first DVI operation. When was it and where was it?
Yeah, first one would have been back in 2002, which wasn't long after I actually started in the field, and that was the terrorist bombings in Bali in 2002, where there was 200-something victims and 88 of them were Australians.
Now, thankfully, most of us have never been at the site of a post-bomb site, if you like. So can you describe what you're walking into on a day like that?
Essentially, you know, in the very initial stages, which is probably just before we get there, it's mass confusion. I would say mass confusion and lots of, you know, well-meaning people trying to help out. And essentially, the first thing we need to do is try to secure the scene to make sure we preserve all the evidence, both for the sort of criminal investigation and for the humanitarian investigation for the identity of the deceased. So it's making sense of that confusion and trying to calm everything down and dealing with your own adrenaline and your own, you know, emotions that are sort of coursing through your body at the time to try and settle all down, put your clinical, you know, game face on and just get down to work.
Tell me about the adrenaline. Why would your adrenaline be pumping at a bomb site? Could you just explain that to me?
Oh, these things are always, you know, they're terribly devastating incidents and terribly tragic, and there's always, you know, mass media interest plus families of the deceased and families of the injured. There's injured people to deal with, and, you know, it's just the general havoc and chaos, and you get very, excited is not the right word, but you really do, every sense is right up on edge.
Now, the Bali bombings, of course, was of particular interest to Australia because of the over 200 people that died, just shy of 90 were Australian. So you had to represent, I suppose, your country as much as anything else. Where do you begin at a bomb site that enormous in terms of trying to identify victims?
The first thing to do is in securing the scene of the incident, and that's it's a very sort of methodical, mainly a police-driven process of mapping the scene, photographing absolutely everything, tagging absolutely everything you find, and making sure you know exactly where everything is in the position that it came to rest after the explosion. And not until after you've done all that do you start collecting all the human remains and property and et cetera, et cetera. So even when all the human remains are all collected and transported to whatever mortuary you're working in, you have with you all the maps and information and photographs to do with where those remains were found so you can start to reconstruct some of the picture.
So it's just this awful, grisly, macabre jigsaw puzzle.
Exactly right. And depending on and depending on the incident, you know, the jigsaw pieces can be smaller or larger.
What are the greatest obstacles you face then when you're trying to identify people with this job at hand?
Depending on the nature of the incident, really. Some incidents, so-called closed incidents, which are incidents where we know the passenger manifest, for instance, a plane crash. So we know who was on the plane, we know who has died. Incidents such as the Bali bombings or other natural disasters, such as bushfires, etc., you don't often know who the victims are. There's a lot of people reported missing, but you don't know the exact passenger manifest. So drilling down to know exactly who has died is the first problem, and then matching the list of the missing people with the list of deceased people that you have, and also issues such as in explosions and plane crashes, the issue of fragmentations and multiple body parts, etc., etc.
What is your biggest weapon in or tool in the in terms of helpfulness when it comes to trying to piece the fragments together?
That'd have to be DNA.
Right.
So getting DNA out of various body part tissues and matching them up. So DNA is an enormous help. And, you know, in most cases where there's large amounts of fragmentation, DNA is usually the major form of identification tool, which was the case from the recent air crash in the French Alps.
Were you involved in that operation?
No.
But you were involved in the Ukraine, were you, in the MH17?
MH17, yes.
So
yes,
when
we sent a team over there.
So when you get into a scene like that, one can only imagine the lack of human remains, for want of a better expression or word, to find, also spread out over such a distance. You must look at that as a very daunting task.
No, it's an incredibly daunting task. MH17 was a particular problem because clearly the plane went down in a war zone. It exploded high in the air, so fragments of the aircraft and bodies were scattered over sort of kilometres rather than in a confined area. And also the scene had been severely compromised by the people on the ground, not allowing the investigators in and tampering with the evidence and sort of moving bodies around and doing their own thing before we got there.
Because the site had become essentially politicised, hasn't it?
That's very true.
Yeah, which can't be of any use to you. Any ever impossible really impossible to identify someone?
Yes, that's definitely the case. Clearly, if you don't find the remains of anyone, which can happen, and also in cases where there's been intense fire, it can be impossible to get DNA, and although you might recognise a piece of tissue as being human, it just might be impossible to get any identifying information out of that piece of tissue.
Can you take us to a local tragedy to you, which was Black Saturday? A lot of us wouldn't be familiar with that. Maybe you just take us through what happened that time and your role in it.
No, that's right. Yeah, Black Saturday was sort of the worst bushfire disaster that we've had here in Australia, and it occurred February 2009, and we'd had quite a severe heat wave beforehand. We'd had several days of above 40 degrees, and I think on the actual day it got to about 46, 47 degrees, and a number of fires around Melbourne in the mountain country was very, very dry. It'd been dry for a long time, and some fires got out of control, and it burned through something like 3 million acres and destroyed 2,000 houses and took 170 lives.
And you arriving there, as I say, as an Australian looking at that, do you kind of take a deep breath and say, right, get down to business, or do you treat it like any other site, or do you find yourself a bit more emotionally engaged, if you like, because of the nature of where it is?
I think you can't help but being more emotionally engaged because, you know, I work in an institute where there's 200 people, and there was people there, new people who had died or related to people, and new people had died, et cetera, in the fire. So it was quite close to us from that point of view. And but you really have to try and keep all those emotions in check and just sort of get down. And the best thing you can do for these families and for these people is to put your clinical face on and just do the job to the best of your ability as fast as you can.
Have you ever got to a job or got to a point in a job where you just felt overwhelmed, or have you always been able to complete the task?
We've always been able to complete the task that we've been given. Now, the most overwhelming operation I've been involved in was the tsunami, Boxing Day 2004, where we were sent to Thailand. Mm. And in that case, there was 5,000 deceased people. And that operation went for sort of close on a year. And we identified all but 400. So I think there was about 400 bodies left at the end that we couldn't identify. But the theory was that most of those were people that were unknown to be in Thailand at the time. So people from over the borders in Cambodia and Laos and those sorts of things that have sort of come across the border, asylum seekers or illegal immigrants, if you like, that didn't have any papers with them. But when you're faced with, you know, that number of deceased people, it can be quite daunting. But if you just follow your protocols and do your job and chip away at it slowly, you eventually get there.
When you're having a beer with people and somebody introduced you and said, "This is my friend Richard," and they say, "What do you do?" Do you ever just say, "I'm a dentist," to get away from having to explain the realities, or do you tell them straight up?
I often tell them I'm a farmer.
Is that for obvious reasons or for
it's
different
always
reasons?
Always easier. No, just because it depends on the company, I guess. Some people are happy to talk about what I do, and some people it's a little bit difficult and a little bit much, and it's easier not to sometimes.
Okay, so when you come out with the truth of what it is that you do, what is the most common reaction?
The most common reaction these days is, "Wow, that must be amazing. Is it just like CSI?"
Yeah.
The most common reaction, this sort of fascination and interest, usually from people who, you know, don't really have an understanding of the true nature of the job that we do.
Yeah.
Some people are fairly horrified and couldn't think of anything worse. But the majority of people's reactions is, you know, fascination and interest. So it can be quite a good conversation starter sometimes.
I can imagine. You made that was a gutsy decision in its own right to leave a very, I presume, lucrative and standard and reliable practice as a dentist to pursue this much more exciting, if I can call it that, but certainly possibly riskier job. Are you glad you made that leap of faith?
Oh, definitely. Once I started in the business, I knew that, one, I was good at it, and two, it was always challenging. It was always intellectually stimulating. There's always new things to research and new things to do. And, you know, every day at work is always something new and something different, whereas in private practice, I sort of always knew who was coming to visit me in 3 months' time, booked in at 10:15 in the morning, and it kind of got a bit soul-destroying.
Well, there are a lot of people listening who are in jobs that are probably soul-destroying and maybe quietly right. Googling disasters and identifications.
Well, I was 37 when I changed careers, so, it's never too late.
It's never too late. Listen, it's been very good to talk to you. Thank you for your time this morning.
No problems at all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is Dr. Richard Bassett, who's the part of the disaster victim identification expert. Sorry, that's what he is from Australia, and a forensic dentist. What an interesting job he has. And again, it took some guts to say, right, I'm out of this. I'm bored stiff being a dentist, a regular day in, day out. I want to do something more exciting. And off he went.